Welcome to Environmentality, your source for environmental news, lectures, and interviews with the experts. I'm your host, Dr. Brendan Anthony. Let's dive on in. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Today, I have a very special guest and a dear friend on. Her name is Taylor Maeda, and she has had many titles and many jobs, but she's currently a nutrition educator coordinator at AmeriCorps, and we had an amazing time over the summer working out in Grand Junction on the farm, where she was doing a lot of really cool stuff with food banks, and she'll talk more about that. But she's also had a really great background working with some plant-based alternative foods, and we're going to be talking today about sustainable nutrition. So thanks for being on the show today, Taylor. I'm happy to see you and hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk with you about all things food, my favorite topic, so should be good.
Yeah, you know, you are always cooking up the most magnificent meals, so I feel like food is your passion.
It is. I love all things related to food, so what's there not to like, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So how about we talk a little bit about your story and your connection to food and how you got so passionate about this subject?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I had always grown up, my parents were always making us home-cooked meals growing up, so I'd spent a lot of time in the kitchen. But when I was in high school, I started to get really sick, and so I had like really bad digestive issues. I think, you know, similar to a lot of people who are interested in health and nutrition, I think a lot of it comes from just your own curiosity with how food interacts with your body. And so I was getting pretty sick and was getting a lot of like tests done and found out that I had a like wheat and gluten intolerance. And this was like 10 or 11 years ago when it was less of a thing. And so kind of my whole world got flipped upside down. You know, I'm like a high schooler. All I know is that I can't eat pizza anymore and I need to figure out a different way to eat. And so that really drew me into the kitchen a lot more and started to kind of figure out what would work for me. And then it just kind of stayed with me from there into adulthood, where now I'm love cooking and I love being in the kitchen and I love just like finding new ways to eat that make me feel the best. And so yeah, it really stemmed from like pretty young. I remember making my first flax meal pizza crust when I was like 13 years old, I think.
Crazy. I'm curious, did you have like a mother or a father that loved cooking that could like teach you that, or maybe like a grandparent? Like, was there someone that kind of led you into the culinary arts world?
Yeah, my dad is a really, really good cook. And so we ate a lot. I was really lucky growing up. We ate a lot of, like I said, home-cooked meals. And my dad has Japanese roots. And so a lot of things that were already traditionally gluten-free in terms of rice-based dishes and things like that. But yeah, he was always trying a bunch of different stuff in the kitchen. So it was really fun to always, he was trying to get us involved all the time. So I think that was really helpful for my like culinary knowledge in terms of like not really following recipes and just having fun. And I think that that's like what cooking is all about.
Yeah, no doubt. It's where you can explore and be creative. Mm-hmm. It fosters community, you know, and legacy, right? Like I bet he had recipes that, you know, his parents showed him and that he could then pass on to you. Definitely. I'm curious about what that was at that time. I mean, you mentioned, you know, this wasn't as much of a hot subject, you know, 10 or so years ago, 15 years ago. You know, was there even an availability of like ingredients and alternative types of gluten-free products? Like what was that journey? Was it difficult for you? And what was that like?
Yeah, it was definitely hard at first. I remember my first thought when I got the call from the doctor was like, oh, I'm just going to eat carrots the rest of my life. Like, I don't know what this even is. Like, what is gluten? You know, it's still a popular question now. Sure. But it was definitely hard. And we did cook a lot of food growing up, but we definitely ate more of a traditional American diet. And so it was a lot of learning that my parents had to do also for in terms of like how to shop and grocery shop and find food that I could eat. I realized quickly, because there were some gluten-free products that were in the market, you know, donuts and processed foods. And I didn't really like those as much anyways before all of this. And so that's when I realized, oh, I can just eat things that are naturally gluten-free or like a little bit healthier. Sure. And that's how I feel my best. And so there were some, you know, like kids' cookbooks and like simple recipes and things that I was able to follow. But it was definitely a different landscape than it is now.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. You know, I find it so precarious and amazing now when you walk through a grocery store and you see all the different labels, and it gets a bit challenging at times too, because then you feel like the marketing is attacking you, all these labels on the products.
Gluten-free water.
exactly right. It's like that never had gluten to begin with it. And so it's a bit challenging at times, I think, to kind of sort through all that and to see, I struggle a lot with this with, things that are free range chicken. What is a free range chicken versus a grass fed chicken versus a cage free chicken, right? And all these different nuanced words. And some of them are marketing terms and some of them are actual certifications. And, it gets really challenging. And so I guess you learned all about that, right? Because you were a marketing major, is that correct?
Yes. So that's actually what I was going to mention, is that it is so confusing to be a consumer today. Like, you go to the grocery store and you see magazine, covers with all these different things of like eat butter, don't eat butter, like a lot of sort of like demonization of certain foods and diets. And I think that for me, like my own philosophy is that there's so much contention like in the world with so many things, and food, there doesn't really need to be that with food, right? Like, food can be celebrated, like you were saying, it's cultural, it's personal. And I think that if we just step back and really celebrate food for what it is, it kind of can lift some of the fog that's there with it being confusing. But yes, I did study marketing in college, and I worked, I kind of found myself working in marketing communications professionally for a few years. But I am always aware of the fact that you're constantly just being like there's ads everywhere. You're constantly being targeted at no matter where you go.
It's true. I'm curious then, like, throughout this journey, obviously this was like a personal health journey for you. Was there other motivations along this time that you were starting to then have different callings for this type of a plant-based diet or a gluten-free diet, as far as like the economics or the environmental aspects of it?
Yeah. So it actually, again, now into adulthood, post-college, like I said, I studied marketing. I studied a little bit of nutrition. I was living in New Zealand and I was planning on staying for about a year, but I had to cut it short because, again, I got really sick. This is, like I said, 10 plus years later, got really sick. And when I got back, I came back to the US and I was like, I can't be on antibiotics anymore. Like, I'm getting really sick from this now too. And so I wanted to eat in a way that was just really simple for my body to process foods and to digest them and not put any additional stress on it. And so I read this book by Dr. John McDougall called The Starch Solution, and he advocates for a plant-based diet. And I just figured, okay, I'll give this a try and see how it goes. And that's what really like got me to tip my toes into sort of the plant-based diet world. And from there, I think, again, like traditionally with a lot of people, you start to learn all this other stuff. So like the ethical side of things, the environment, all of that kind of stuff came later, but my health was the first thing that kind of like the first domino, I guess you could say. And so I sort of went down that rabbit hole from there.
Yeah, no doubt. And so I guess then, again, all this influences and motivations for you, I'm sure, started to infiltrate into the type of job and the type of company you wanted to work and work for. I know you worked at Impossible Foods, and if maybe you want to share a little bit about that experience and what that was like during your early career stages.
Definitely. Yeah. I actually was, so right around when this happened, someone had introduced me to someone at Impossible Foods, and this is pretty early. It was 2016. So they didn't have a product in the market yet. So everyone was like, you should go check out this plant-based burger company. I think you'd really like it, knowing that I was interested in plant-based diets.
Were you vegetarian or vegan at the time?
At this time, I was vegan. Yeah. Okay. I was also very anti-corporate jobs. I wanted to continue backpacking the world and traveling and like living my life very simply. And I did not anticipate stepping into the corporate scene. And eventually, I looked at the website and I thought, okay, this is actually like a pretty cool company. I had a lot of questions because, again, now it's like much more of a household name, but back then it was pretty unknown. And so it really was by happenstance. I got connected with someone at the company and they really needed someone. They didn't have a customer service team at the time. And so there was a huge backlog of like emails and phone calls and social media mentions and all of this stuff. And they just were like, we need someone who's going to like heads down, just go through all of this and respond to questions. And it was like a short-term contract. I was like, sure, I can do that. Like, it was really cool because I got to learn so much about the company so fast, because all of these people are emailing, asking questions that I had no idea what the answers were to. So I had to go and find them from, people within the company. And so super interesting way to kind of like step into that world and a company like that. And then from there, it sort of spiraled. We launched the product not that long after. And then I ended up working more in marketing. So doing our demo program, which was another unique opportunity, basically literally traveling with a suitcase full of impossible meat and like a portable griddle to different events, different meetings with investors and board members and customers. And you can't have a meeting and talk about, it's one thing to talk about a product, but it's another thing to show it. Sure. And so I would go to these meetings and I would cook burgers for people and talk about the ingredients. And it was fascinating. I met a lot of really, really interesting people.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm curious if maybe you'd want to maybe articulate a little bit about, you know, what is an impossible burger for someone who's never tried it before? What is it made of? What does it taste like?
Well, yeah, I should also preface with that this was a couple years ago. So I don't know that maybe the ingredients have changed.
Sure,
the
formula has changed a bit.
But, you know, sort of baseline, it was a soy protein. It started actually as a wheat protein. And then when we were there, there was a lot of different iterations and it changed over to a soy protein. There was a potato starch. There was coconut oil to kind of act as the fat. And gosh, this has been so long. I used to give this spiel like so many times a day. And now I'm like, oh, what is it again? There was methyl cellulose, which acted kind of as a binder. And then like the main like sort of shining star of the product was the soy-like hemoglobin, which is what the company has kind of been known for, that like really meaty, bloody taste. And it's pretty crazy. It came, you know, they extracted it from a soybean plant and then used fermentation. And it looks, when you just have like a vial of it, it just looks red. It looks like blood and it kind of tastes like it too. And that's what makes the product kind of, like I said, go from that sort of pink color when it's rare to the, you know, the well done color and flavor of meat once it's cooked.
Yeah, I've heard of other companies injecting like beet juice to try and get that type of appearance. So this was the alternative for Impossible Foods where it was actually coming from soy.
Right. Well, that's what the founder, his whole thing was sort of like, what makes meat taste like meat? And he's a scientist by nature. And so he wanted to go find the answer to that question and found it in heat.
I'm curious about these, you know, board meetings you'd walk into with a suitcase of Impossible Burgers. First, are they shelf stable or did they have to be frozen or how was that transporting?
So fun fact, you can travel with ice packs as long as the ice packs are frozen when you go through security.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, when you walk in with these frozen ice packs and burgers, you're cooking them up, are you engaging with anyone interesting, fun, any...
Definitely. I have cooked burgers for lots and lots of people. I cooked a burger for Bill Gates and I cooked a burger for Jeff Bezos. Those are two really big names. And then the other kind of big
one. You slip them a little resume while you're handing them the burger.
Yeah, exactly. my claim to fame, everyone's like, what did you say to Bill Gates when you met him? And I was like, the only sentence that came out of my mouth was when I was cooking the burger, I said, smells like a burger, doesn't it? And paused. And that's it.
And did he agree with you?
I think he gave me a nod or just kind of was like, I'm just gonna ignore you. But yeah, you know, it was a pretty interesting time to be there, like I said, because it was their, you know, pre-launch of the product, working as like a customer service person when there's no customer service team, to then the last project that I worked on before I left in 2019 was helping to launch our product in Singapore. And like, right. Also, it was like right around the time when they had the Burger King partnership. So to see this, you know, kind of everything come full circle like that was pretty crazy. So yeah, I also cooked a bunch of burgers for people in Singapore when I was there, you know, just
crazy.
So
well, yeah, it must feel so surreal for you now. I mean, obviously you've been gone from the company for a few years now, and to see it where it is now, I mean, that must be pretty striking for you.
Mm-hmm. Just honestly, it's great because now so many people are like, oh, Impossible Foods, that's where you worked. Whereas before, my family was like, so what are you really doing with this veggie burger company? So I think it's great. And also, I think that it is a testament to the fact that people want more alternatives. People are interested in change. People are making the connection between plant-based alternatives and the environment. And so I think it's great when you see some of these like big fast food chains like Burger King with Impossible Foods or whichever one it is that has the Beyond Burger, I can't remember, but to see some of these big names recognize that this is what consumers want. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. And so, you know, if we want to maybe talk a little bit about some of those environmental motivations for plant-based alternatives, you know, I think a lot of the criticism comes down to the animal agriculture is vilified. And I've talked at length about this in other episodes in the podcast that, you know, the problem is not the cow, it's the how. And how often, so often when we produce meat here in the United States, it's such an industrialized system, which is highly intensified, lots of antibiotics, a lot of waste to manage, which then can negatively impact the environment. Not to mention the transportation of waste removal, as well as feed being brought to the site to feed the cows, because we have a very segregated agricultural system. And so that has a really really high carbon footprint. And then what always is in the news is, you know, the flatulence and the burps and the methane emissions of cows as well. And so when we think about animal agriculture, for me, I'm not necessarily against it. I believe that animals and meat can be produced in a sustainable fashion. But more often than not, especially here in a more industrialized country, it's not done that way. And so I think when we think about the environmental benefits of eating less meat, you have, you know, reduced carbon footprint, less water pollution, eutrophication, less water usage, and then as well as less nitrogen inputs, again, which also contributes to the eutrophication of dead zones and oceans, et cetera. So there's a lot of benefits, I think, of eating a plant-based diet. One of the criticisms I often get and what I hear about is, you know, a lot of these plant-based alternatives are made with soy, which is, I believe, like 90+% is all in GMO, which, again, I'm not necessarily against GMO, but some other consumers are. And, you know, soy is another big industrialized crop here in the U.S. And it gets a lot of chemicals, whether that be pesticides, fertilizers. Again, it has environmental input as well.
Sure.
And so I think a lot of the criticism that some people have is, you know, you're going from one system that produces a product that has environmental impact to another that has arguably just as much or maybe slightly less of an environmental impact in the form of soy. So I guess, what is your perspective on somebody who might feel that these soy alternatives are not necessarily like the perfect solution to trying to mitigate some of the environmental impacts of meat?
Well, I think that that's correct. Like, I don't necessarily know if I think that it's a perfect solution, right? I think that it's a good option and I think it's a good alternative. I think if someone wants to make a change, if someone is aware of a lot of the things that you just mentioned and someone is looking to reduce their meat intake for whatever reason, whether it's the environment, ethical, health, what have you, then these products can be really good sort of like gateway products into a more plant-based lifestyle. Sure. If you don't want to just jump into eating sort of like a Gardein potato black bean burger, right? Like, that's not as appealing for a lot of people. And again, that's the whole thing, is like, food should be celebrated. It should be enjoyed. It should be delicious. And if that means that you're, if you feel like you're going to be making a huge sacrifice by not eating meat to turn plant-based, and you're going to feel like you're sacrificing and missing out on something, that's not a sustainable diet or lifestyle. So if you can enjoy these products, maybe not three times a day, right? Like, but occasionally or however much you need, then that is a much more way to kind of eat in a more compassionate plant-based way versus, you know, if you're going to, if we're comparing it to like industrial meat. I think that's what the big thing is, right? Is it's kind of like, what are you replacing it with? Or if you're eating a plant-based meat product in replacement of meat, industrialized meat, that's one thing. But if you're eating it in place of like a bowl of lentils, like, okay, you know, it's always the trade-off of like, what are you comparing it to? And I think that's where it gets tricky in terms of like, when you see headlines in the news, it's like, well, if you're comparing a soy burger to a bowl of locally grown, you know, vegetables, it's a lot different than if we're looking at the way, like, if you look at the standard American diet. So, but I, again, you know, I don't, I think that Impossible Foods and other companies like this, I think they have really great, like really bold missions and like visions for their companies and for changing the world. I don't know if I necessarily, I don't think it's like a one-stop shop for like a solution, right? I don't know what you think in this, but that's just my own personal perspective.
No, I love that perspective. And I think it touches on obviously many different aspects. I think the comparison thing is huge, but you also kind of mentioned this idea of there being other reasons for eating this way and this idea of compassionate, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this doesn't require killing animals to eat. And so for people who are approaching veganism or plant-based diets from a animal ethics point of view, this is a great alternative. For people who are approaching this from a personal dietary choice where they don't want to consume meat for health reasons or whatever it may be, this is a good alternative. And mm-hmm. so there are other motivations for eating this type of diet, which I appreciate and am glad there are options. You know, we talked about at the beginning, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have any of these alternatives.
Yeah, definitely. And it is like we were saying too earlier, like food is, it's so personal and it's so cultural. And, you know, I can sit down with my dad, who is a meat eater, and we can enjoy, you know, an Impossible Burger otherwise and have a meal together. Whereas if I'm like, hey, try this vegan thing, you know, he might not be as into it, but it food brings people together. And I think that plant-based meat is almost like in the gray area where it kind of is trying to bridge the gap between sort of like people who eat plant-based, people who eat meat, and kind of trying to find something that is delicious and kind of can cover both bases. It's a hard place to be. It's a hard thing to try to accomplish.
Super hard. I love it. So plant-based burgers are a gateway for carnivores trying to eat more plant-based, and B, a bridge for meat eaters and plant eaters to come together. And I love that.
Yeah, that's just how I think of it. And I think, like I said, it's, we're not here to, you know, demonize food, right? And if someone, I think if people want to be plant-based, if they want to eat meat, there's, it's not good or bad or, you know, that kind of language behind it. It's you eat the way you eat for whatever your motivations and reasons are. And these companies are just there to provide like another sort of like, I mean, it's a new landscape, right? Like this stuff, like you said, it didn't exist a while ago. And so it's out there to try to create an alternative for people who still want to eat delicious foods, but also maybe cut down on the resources that go into it. So
I love it. Yeah, it was a hard question and I think you answered it appropriately. So I appreciate you bearing with me and allowing me to play a little devil's advocate there for you.
Yeah, of course.
I'm curious now on your perspective on, you have these plant-based meats, but now we're starting to see even one step further, right? Because as I mentioned before, plant-based, especially soy, still requires a lot of resources. And I think now the next innovation that's already begun is lab-grown meats. I'm curious, do you have any perspective or opinion on lab-grown meats?
I am not well-versed in the world of lab-grown meat. I don't know how I personally feel about it. I don't really know. I don't even know if there's any in the market right now. I think the last I heard that there was like chicken that was like thousands of dollars or something because the operating costs are so high that they're like, right? I don't know. What's the latest? You give me.
I'm not sure on the latest. I know there's some happening in Europe, and mm-hmm. I know obviously like the Bill Gates and the Jeff Bezos mm-hmm. of the world are investing in these types of companies. And yeah, I think obviously the costs are still extremely high, but I know the concept has been proven and it's mm-hmm. happening, but I don't believe anything's in
that market. Sounds a much trickier sort of way into the market. If people are dubious about soy-based burgers, I'm not sure how consumers will feel about lab-grown burgers, but I guess it maybe, not to flip the table here, but how you feel if it's a similar conversation behind vegetables and fruits that are farmed traditionally versus like indoor, you know, a lot of these big indoor vertical farms. Is it kind of the same where it's a bit of like an artificial environment, but the quality is still just as good? I don't know.
Sure. Well, it still requires an immense amount of electricity, you know, so there's still inputs. Right. There's always going to be inputs for agricultural system. And I guess the goal is to try and find ways to minimize that the most while still providing food security and food access and a healthy, safe, quality product. And I think that's going to be the goal. And I think the challenge of this next century as the population continues to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be very fascinating.
So I kind of bring up another buzzword, and it's another buzzword that I know you're passionate about, and that is food security. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, maybe if you just want to share a little bit about your passion, and obviously you've left Impossible Foods, you're in this new current position now. If you want to maybe talk about how that passion of food security coupled with nutrition has kind of led you into the next kind of season of your life.
Yeah, definitely. So I keep coming back to this one idea of, I love nutrition, like I've mentioned multiple times, but we can't even, and sustainability, but we can't even like have those kinds of conversations really if we don't talk about food access and food security, right? Like in a lot of ways, it's it's a big privilege to be able to think about your nutrition and to think about making sustainable choices, not just in food, but in all aspects of life. And if you don't have a consistent, reliable access to, you know, nutritious foods, I think that it's really hard. You're not probably thinking a lot about some of that stuff. And so I really am drawn towards sort of the bottom of the pyramid. If we're looking at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you remember from like eighth grade, I don't even know what class you learned about that, but food is such a basic need. We all need food. We all eat hopefully multiple times a day, but the fact that we live in this country and there's still something like 35 to 40 million people in the US that are food insecure, it really just blows my mind. And I think about it all the time. And I think that in order to, like I said, even talk about nutrition, you kind of have to take a few steps back and think about food security and food access. And so, and including talking about sustainable food systems, right? Like that, it all kind of like backpedals all the way to the bottom of that pyramid there. And then from there, we can kind of move forward. So yeah, I really like tackling sort of that part first. It's kind of like you have to lay the foundation down and then you can start to integrate. So my work at the food bank right now is, you know, like you mentioned, I've worked with you on the farm over the summer. We grow produce, we distribute it out to the local pantries. And then I go to one major food bank in Grand Junction and basically I'm setting up nutrition, like an nutrition education program and nutrition interventions. But I'm fully aware every day that I go in there that my job is to just meet people wherever they're at. Some days I have a really great conversation with people about their health and nutrition. Other days it's just about, you know, sort of coming in, providing hopefully a comfortable environment for people to sort of come in, get their food, kind of breaking down like barriers and stigmas. And again, coming back to just, we all need food. If I can provide you with food that is delicious and hopefully good for you, that's great. But if you want to come in and get some Oreos and take those home, also, I fully understand that there's a place for Oreos in your diet. So take them home and enjoy them, you know?
Yeah, sure, sure. It's good. I think it's a balanced way of looking at it, you know, and I think I love your perspective on addressing like the core needs. And I think when I talk about sustainability, I think when a lot of people talk about sustainability, that social element has to be so integrated, right? We can't start to think about all these other issues like the economy or the environment if we're not meeting the core needs of humans first, because from there, once we have a healthy civilization, then we can start to better and more proactively handle some of these big issues around climate change or the economy or food access and food security, et cetera, and ultimately nutrition. And I appreciate your perspective on this idea that like nutrition is a luxury and a privilege. You know, when so many people are just trying to get like enough calories in a day, it doesn't matter so much how they're getting them. But I appreciate now what you're doing and trying to couple those two things together, where you can bring in both the access and the nutrition so you can couple those things simultaneously. And I think that's so critical for meeting like the holistic aspect of a person, because ultimately, yes, Oreos are great for, you know, a little cheap, but it's not going to be something that's like ultimately satisfying
to the
nourishment of a person. And so bringing in another element is so
definitely
critical.
Yeah. And that's what's been so fun is I, you know, like today, this morning, I went to the food bank, I looked around, saw what they had, took a bunch of ingredients, made this carrot chickpea dip type thing, brought it in and passed out little samples while people are waiting. And my whole purpose is to help spark, one, get people excited about food. Again, always coming back to just that as like a baseline of like celebrating food. And then to sort of share with people different ways that they can use food. Really simple too. I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm not using all these crazy ingredients, because I think that is also sort of an idea. People think, oh, eating healthy, eating plant-based, this is really expensive. I have to really put in a lot of money. And I'm very much so like, you don't need all the weird powders and supplements and things like that. You can eat rice and beans. You can eat healthy on a budget and it can be just as delicious, and you don't have to feel like you're missing out on anything. And so that's sort of my whole mission. Every day I go in there is like, what can I make that maybe people haven't tried before? Or if it's an ingredient that people are less familiar with, or don't really like, how can I make it fun, interactive, engaging, and hopefully get people to take it home with them and try some recipes.
Is there a particular recipe that you've had just a lot of fun with recently that people were really excited about?
Yeah, you know, I made, I don't know if you remember over the summer, but I was eating these all the time, just like little energy balls. I'm a big, you know, I think especially as school is starting up again and kids are in class, like always having some sort of like healthy snacks on hand, I think is like instrumental to not experiencing like huge sugar crashes, and then you're just hungry and then you just grab the first thing you see. And so just really simple, like just take a bowl and do like oats, some peanut butter. If you have some like dried fruit that you can chop up or nuts or anything like that, you could add a sweetener, but you also don't need to. I a lot of times don't, and just mix them up and make them into balls or whatever shape you want and keep them in the fridge all week. And it's such a fun way to, like I said, if you have kids around, to get them involved in the kitchen at a young age. But yeah, a lot of people love, honestly, anything with peanut butter, like people are pretty much on board. Or if you're allergic to peanuts, you can use another. True. You can use sunflower butter, whatever, you know, that stuff's all good too. But yeah, those recipes are always popular.
Curious, have you had anybody, any conversations with people where somebody's just shown a lot of gratitude, or like any like highlight of this experience in this program you've been engaged with for about 10 months now?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been very open-minded and very, you know, some days, like I said, you're meeting people where they're at. So some days people don't want to talk to you, and that's totally fine. I understand. But for the most part, everyone is, I'm really lucky that the food bank I'm at is very sort of progressive, and they want to sort of provide a lot of different resources for people. And so at the baseline, it's very important to just provide, like I said, break down barriers and remove stigmas and make it an environment that is comfortable. It's not just get in, get out, get your food, leave. You know, it's an environment where you can come in, you can talk with people, you can learn something. People, you know, my biggest thing every day is, who can I look these people, like, can I have conversations with people, whether it's about food and nutrition or not, but like, how can I sort of like help to integrate into the community and build those relationships? And so, yeah, I really enjoy the work there. It's been really awesome. It's been such a fun way to kind of, you know, when I was at Impossible Foods, it was really fun, big mission, really bold, far reaching. A lot of my work when I wasn't at events was sort of behind the computer. And so now to sort of, what I really wanted and I missed when I was there was, you know, I was like, I talk about plants all the time, but I really just want to work with the plants. I'm talking to people, but I really want to like engage with the people. And so this was exactly what I wanted, where I've gotten to grow the food, be dirty, like put the seeds in the ground, and then also be able to, like I said, build these relationships with people in real time and kind of like really sink into the community. And so it's been very positive. Yeah, I think people are very receptive and open to my, hopefully, to the stuff that I'm doing out there.
Yeah, well, it sounds amazing. And I love that your passion wanted to drive you deeper into not only just the education understanding of the food system from like production all the way to delivery to customers and for people that are part of the food bank, but also driving you deeper into the relationship and understanding that like relationships are so critical when we're talking about something as personal as dietary choice, nutrition, and the food that they're bringing home and ultimately feeding their kids with. And so I think having the knowledge and the relationships and that community-oriented focus, I think, is so critical when you're talking about trying to address some of these social needs. And so I admire and am encouraged by the pursuits you're taking in that regard.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I mean, it's definitely, you know, you're super passionate about peaches and fruit trees and all of your stuff. And I think when you're passionate about something, it's so, people ask me, like a client asked me at the food bank, like, oh, why do you like being here? Like, I honestly just love food. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, I love food. I love talking to people about food. You and I, like, you know, we've talked about food a bunch. And if I can share that with other people throughout my day and try to get other people excited about eating. And I think that's it. It's like, sure, I love nutrition, but I'm much more passionate about people having healthy relationships with food. I know a lot, you know,
crucial.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have their own journeys with that, you know, and I think that if you can have a healthy relationship with the food that you eat and feel good about it and be excited about it, then that's, you know, that can be like life changing in a lot of ways.
Well, that kind of leads me to some of my more summative and conclusionary questions is, you know, what has been maybe a major takeaway, and perhaps you just said it, from living and pursuing this kind of plant-based life?
You know, I kind of like fell into plant-based eating because I think that this might sound silly, but I'm just like a very simple person. And to me, eating plant-based is very simple and it makes a lot of sense, where there's no middle person between me and the food that I'm eating. It's the, rather than feeding the plants to an animal, I'm eating the animal. It just doesn't like compute as well in my brain as eating the plants directly. And if you want to eat animal, like if you don't want to be plant-based, I think, like I said, that's totally fine. For me, I feel really great when I eat a lot of mostly plant-based foods. And it just makes a lot of sense to me. And it, I think that I like to find fun, unique ways to eat vegetables and everything. And in terms of like takeaways, I think it's just a matter of like eating in such a way that makes you feel your best. And if something makes you feel bad over and over again, maybe just do little experiments on yourself and try not eating it for a little while and see how you feel. And, you know, I think I told you that over the summer a little bit when you weren't feeling great. And so,
yeah, well, and to provide some results for you, it's yeah. definitely gluten. I have been eating more gluten and I've been feeling so much better. So I think I've developed some sort of intolerance to gluten lately.
I think that if you eat something and you immediately are like, oh, I feel really sick and my stomach hurts, it's probably a red flag that maybe.
I know, but you see, I'm just a stupid male and just was like, oh, I'm just going to keep eating and. It'll sort itself out, and I eat 18 Tums, and I'll figure it out.
You just can't let go of the Los Jays burritos. That's the thing.
The Los Jays burritos and a good PBJ. I'll tell you what. The diet of champions.
There's some good now, at least. There's some good gluten-free bread out there, but
there is, and I've been going to Trader Joe's lately and getting gluten-free bread, and it's actually been amazing. Mm-hmm. And now I like eating sandwiches again.
Yeah, there you go, because you don't feel bad after. That's exactly. What it's all about. It's all about just finding what works for you as an individual, and it's gonna look so different for everybody. And I think that's like the beautiful part of life is that we all enjoy different things. For different reasons. And like I said, food is very personal. And so whatever it is that you want to eat that makes you feel good, I think eat it. And if it's not always the like quote unquote healthiest or most nutritious option, like that's totally fine. Don't beat yourself up over it. Eat it and enjoy it. And you know, just keep living.
It's good. It's good to have a good relationship with our food. And, you know, just listen to you talk, I'm reminded of a few different things. The first is that I read somewhere that, you know, there's about a dozen different animals that we eat. But there's 80,000 plus edible plants. Wow. And so eating a plant-based life is full and rich of opportunity and creativity and colors and all these amazing things, you know? And so often I think we get so focused like, oh, I need meat in this, but it's like meat can, to me at times just feels so boring.
Right.
When you have 80,000 plus plants that you can experiment and eat.
Definitely.
The other thing that I'm reminded of just is listening to your talk and just the simplicity of kind of how your philosophy is with your food and your diet and your relationship to that is a quote from Michael Pollan in Defense of Food, where he kind of summarizes the entire book in three short sentences, which is eat food, like actual food, not food like substances like Oreos. Mm-hmm. Eat food, mostly plants, not too much. And I think that's like the most simple way you can probably encompass it. And it's exactly kind of what you're expressing.
I think, I definitely agree. And I've seen that quote before and I really like it. And I do think, I just want to touch really quickly before we like finish this part. But I think it is so simple. And I say that, but also I'm reminded that for a lot of people, it isn't that simple. And having a healthy relationship with food is really difficult. And I didn't always have the healthiest relationship with food. Like I said, when I was younger and going through all these health issues, you know, like I think I was like in middle school the first time that I thought to myself, like, oh, I'm overweight. Like as a middle schooler, when you're going through those awkward phases. And, you know, I think that it's really hard sometimes to overcome that. And, you know, everyone sort of like navigates that differently. And I do think that I just don't want to minimize that. I think that it is like a touchy, it is a not touchy, but it is a more intricate sort of situation for a lot of people. And while my perspective on eating can be very simple, I really understand that having healthy relationships with food and just body image and all of that is not necessarily always that simple.
Yeah, no doubt. And I appreciate you saying that. I recognize my own ignorance to that at times. And I think it's super, super critical that you highlight that. So thanks for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Cool. Well, any last tips and tricks for someone who's cooking in the kitchen, wants to cook plant-based? I have seen you whip up some amazing concoctions over the summer.
Yeah, I think honestly, just like have fun. Like there's no rules. That's what I always tell people. We have kids who come, we do farm to school stuff. And I'm always like, there's no rules in the kitchen. Maybe with baking, there's a little bit more rules because it's a little more fun. But when you're cooking, like just have fun and try different things. Honestly, I feel like spices and like sauces are your friend. I always say I don't really make meals. I just eat like bowls of food. Like I don't really I never say like, oh, I'm making this like very specific thing. It's literally just usually like a green, a grain, maybe a bean, a sauce that ties it all together. and there's a meal. So I think just whatever flavor profiles you like, just try them out. And I think, yeah, lots of spices can really be your friend. And just try things and have fun. And like I said, yeah, there's no rules in the kitchen. So if you overcook something, then you know for next time not to do that.
I think we need a Taylor cookbook in the future.
maybe one day.
Well, thank you so much for hopping on and just sharing some of your amazing experiences, the things you're pursuing now, and obviously just all your wonderful advice and philosophy on eating plant-based foods.
Yeah, of course. Thanks again for having me. This was really fun.